Welcome back to TRP.
Behind the Invisible Door by James W. Corcoran. In the creeping morning light, he could see far out in the bay a strange, indiscernible shape rising and falling to the rhythm of the ocean, and by the shore he could hear the pebbles roll incessant in their grinding homage to the sea. A cockatoo cried sharp and shrill, and, glancing up, he saw it flee its leafy canopy high in the cliffs above. Kalo paused a while to listen to the strains of the ocean, a music as ancient as time itself and as pure as the air he now breathed. Gazing out again, he caught the faintest hint of yellow emanating from the object bobbing just inside the reefs. The rising sun's rays began to kiss the blushing eastern sky as he fastened his life jacket and waded barefoot into the warm waters of the Sulu Sea. Placing a green discolored bucket on board the hide-covered craft, he undid the moorings and with a firm push set off, climbing deftly on board in anticipation of the morning's catch. The blush receded, and a pale blue wash streaked the sky as he paddled through the restless surf. Upon reaching the shallows, he lifted the bucket, grimaced and began to bait the fishing hooks with pieces of rotten chicken liver, 24 in all, each a foot apart, tied to a hemp rope fastened to the stern of his fragile craft. Carefully, he fed the putrid line into the turquoise waters, leaned over and scrubbed his hands before planting a kiss on the painted wooden beads around his neck. They were his good luck charm, given to him by his father on his 12th birthday, 2 months previously. Tragically, within a week of receiving them, his father had been lost in a storm in this very bay. They never found a body, just the shattered remains of his boat washed up on the shore. Though Kalo still grieved, he felt death was just an invisible door, something which we all must pass through, and that his father was on the other side, watching over and protecting him. The island of Gwipiani, one of a multitude of tiny islands that make up the Malaya archipelago, lies between the northeast coast of Borneo and the western islands of the Philippines. Lost on the outer peripheries and sparsely populated, with little or no infrastructure, it is, for the most part, self-reliant. After many years of campaigning, elders shamed the government into sending a teacher to the island. She was young and enthusiastic and taught the children as best she could. Through her efforts, the children began to understand a world beyond their shores, an alien world of cities, skyscrapers and apartment blocks, a world that frightened Kalo. The thought of men working like machines on 8-hour shifts, forced to do the same work each and every day, locked within the same four walls, horrified him. There was just a single electric generator on the island. It was filthy and noisy. It spouted black plumes, but more often than not, it was broken, awaiting a replacement part or a shipment of diesel from the mainland. But the islanders were resourceful and never depended on such things. They had learned that nature could provide for their every need. Despite the simplicity of his life, Kalo wished for nothing more. Sure, he had dreamt of seeing the world one day, but his heart was rooted in Gwipiani, buried deep in its fertile soil amongst the bones of his ancestors. The wind began to rise and he raised the sail. It fluttered unconvincingly, flapping limply by the mast. He could feel the sun warm his skin and he listened to the gurgling sounds of water on the bow and the creak of the timber substructure as he paddled further out into the bay. Upon leaving the lee of the cliffs, the breeze began to stiffen. The parched sail, bleached white from the sun and the salt sea air, began to swell like a pregnant belly, and the boat listed to starboard as it cut through the water. He looked back to the island, shaped like a giant turtle, and to its head, and he could see the welcome grey-blue smoke rise from the earth ovens where mothers bake their wheaten bread. The sound of a jet distracted him, and he shaded his eyes, peering into the blue vastness, searching for the silver glint or snail-like trail. Eventually, he spotted it, far from where he perceived it to be, skirting the edge of the heavens, and he smiled at the absurdity of it all. One day, he promised himself. The breeze was fresh and soothing, and he closed his eyes, savoring the magic. Despite his father's death, he loved the thrill of the open sea. The sail flagged momentarily and he changed tack. It was then he spotted it again, trapped on the reefs, with frenzied gulls swooping from above. From the boat, it was impossible to discern. Perhaps it was nothing more than a plastic drum, flotsam, caught in the treacherous currents that ensnare the reefs. Risking a closer look, he dropped sail. The boat slowed and righted itself, and Kalo paddled forward. As he neared, the gulls scattered skyward, wings outstretched, emitting shrill cries while floating in the breeze above the jagged rocks, and his apprehension grew. It was a similar color to the life jacket his father had worn that fateful day. The currents were stronger now, and Kalo had to paddle hard, fighting to keep control. He felt a dull ache in the pit of his stomach, and he began to breathe in sharp, shallow breaths. A half-eaten arm floating on the surface confirmed what he already suspected. It was a body lying face down in the water. The bleached white of the cranium bone could be seen through the torn scalp and matted hair. Kalo heaved, emptying the contents of his stomach into the swirling waters. The boat began to drift towards the jagged rocks, and he pulled hard on the paddle, fearful of his own demise. Was it? He wondered. Could it possibly be? The clothes were shredded, and the body too ravaged to say for certain. But how could he leave without knowing? How could he deny his father a decent burial, or allow his body to be taken by the sea? Yet, it was much too dangerous to venture any closer. One brush against the reef and his boat would be torn to shreds. A mixture of fear and panic consumed him, and he paddled blindly, pulling hard against the treacherous currents to the safety of the breakwater. His arms ached, his muscles burned, and his chest heaved as he gasped for air. Exhausted, he sat drifting aimlessly, head in hands, torn and confused, helplessly watching the gulls descend to feed upon the torso. Despairingly, Kalo leant over the stern and retrieved the fishing line. The stench was nauseating as he hauled the rope on board. Unhooking a few flapping milkfish, he tossed them to the floor beneath the wicker seat. Again, he paddled towards the reef, scattering the gulls. When he was close enough, he raised the rope and swung it sling-like in the direction of the corpse. It fell short and he cursed his luck. Grabbing the paddle, he rushed to the front of the boat just in time to save it from a jagged reef. Luckily, he managed to ram the paddle between two small rocks and use it as an anchor. Again, he hauled on the line and tossed it in the direction of the body. This time, it hit the bleached skull bone with a dull thump, and the head bobbed like a ball in the water. He jerked sharply on the rope, and to his relief, the body quivered. The hooks had taken hold. Dislodging the paddle, he pushed off. Frantically, he plunged the wooden blade deep into the rushing water and pulled hard. It seemed a hopeless cause that he would never save the body from the current's grasp. But slowly, almost indiscernibly, it did begin to move. Heartened, he dug deep and found reserves of strength he didn't know he possessed as he began the extrication. He was at the point of collapse when he eventually reached the shelter of the breakwater and raised the sail. The journey homeward was the loneliest of his young life. Not since the morning he had found his father's shattered boat upon the shore did he feel so upset, so alone, so vulnerable. Glancing nervously at the corpse twisting and rolling in the clear turquoise waters behind the boat and the gulls above, he prayed the hooks would hold. Nearing the beach, he could see it was empty and he thanked God his younger sister was nowhere to be seen. He wondered if he could or if he should attempt to bury the remains without his mother knowing. Should he spare her the agony of seeing the ravaged corpse of the man she loved? Or should he give her a chance to say a last goodbye, comforted in the knowledge that at last he lay amongst his own? Untying the dragline, he jumped from the boat as it neared the shore. Fighting for a foothold, he desperately tried to keep an even pull upon the rope. For a moment he felt it slacken and feared he had lost the body, but soon realized it was tumbling in the surf towards the shore. Only when the corpse lay face down on the beach did he realize the full extent of the ravage and decay. Pulling the remains further up the beach, Kalo went to secure his boat and returned with a paddle. He had seen a corpse once before, his grandfather's, but he was 6 years old at the time, and the man lay serenely in his bed as if asleep. Nothing could have prepared him for this. Slowly, he levered the body with the paddle, flipping it onto its back with a squelching thud. The flesh was eaten from the face, and all that remained was a white protruding skull with gaping holes for eyes. Again his stomach heaved. Forcing himself to look again, he noticed the sinister smile created by the teeth and the hanging jawbone. But where was the gap, the missing front tooth? Kalo raised his hand to his mouth, realizing this was not his father. At first, he felt relief, then disappointment. His father's body was out there still, drifting on the tide, but at least he could remember him as he was that fateful morning, and there was no need to lie to his mother, nor would he have to watch her suffer further heartache. Who was this person, he wondered, lying in the sand before him? It was only then he noticed a black money belt still firmly clasped above the protruding hip bone. Holding his nose, he bent down and undid the clip. Slipping the belt from beneath the body, he held it at a distance and went to rinse it in the sea. The zip was stuck, but he managed to force it open. Inside, he found a brown leather wallet. To his astonishment, among the contents was a wad of dollar bills and some credit cards. Carefully, he began to peel the dollar bills, counting them as he did so. His eyes widened. 300, 400, 500, and 50, 70, 90, $620 in all. He kissed his beads and glanced out towards the Sulu Sea, happy in the knowledge his father was out there still, and always would be behind that invisible door, looking after him.
Please tune in to our next episode.